Welcome to Expounded Universe, Season 9, Episode 7, The Beast with Two Sabacks. The book, Crucible, by Troy Denning. The year, 2013. With your hosts, Jeff and John. Let's go!
Welcome to Expounded Universe, the Star Wars Expanded Universe novel discussion podcast. I'm your ever getting it wrong host, Jeff, joined as always by the guy who laughs at me, John.
But you were doing so good.
I know. I didn't
you
mess
just,
it up
you
ever.
You just stopped it ever. I thought you were going to say like evergreen or something.
It's me, your ever greasy host.
That's it. There we are.
Did I get it there? Should I call myself that in the future?
You got it.
Mm-hmm. It's me, the guy with a horrible beard.
Aw.
It's getting really, really big.
You got a bushel there on the chin.
I do. I got to scape this thing down a bit. It's hit the point now where I can tie it off and actually have like a tied off beard.
Little braids.
Yeah, little braids and stuff. I can do like the Thor. So it's time to go. I mean, ultimately, my daughter loves the beard, which is why I let it grow out in the first place, right?
Uh-huh.
But it's hit a point now where it's long enough that when she's sleeping on me, as she often does, I can't not wake her up with a fucking thing. It's like I got a broom strapped to my chin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's got to be hard to maneuver around if you're trying to do that.
It is. I've never had a beard this long before, and I don't intend to again.
Yeah.
And there are so many weird things about it that I didn't anticipate. Like sometimes I'll find it just under my shirt. Just like it'll just somehow
just
my
hiding down
somehow
there.
My shirt will get just, worked up over it and it'll be like this and like it's just hiding
hiding
yeah and
that way you can lift your chin up and surprise people with your beard.
Ooh-ha! And they'll be like, oh, I just thought you had a weird neck.
I just thought you were being a big dumb idiot for some reason.
Also, yes.
Indeed.
Beards could be two things.
Look, I contain multitudes.
I contain bearditudes. Yeah, it's time to trim.
Yeah.
It definitely is. I feel like I'm going to take about half of it off.
Good.
So anyway, instead of just talking about my face, why don't we talk about what's going on and what had been going on when last we left our heroes.
So when last we left our heroes, Han was taken off by the Krefs to some mysterious place, and hot on their tail was Luke and Leia, and then they got shot down by ship and crashed into the Ormney, maybe.
The Ormney is the Star Destroyer-sized asteroid mining ship that is the primary work base of operations for our evil villains, the Kref brothers. That said, it's not their only base, and not even their coolest base.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, come on. They're, like, the people that own most of the universe at this point, they've got to have some cool places.
They got to have a way cooler secret base than this.
Yeah.
And that's probably where they're headed. But yeah, right at the end of the last chapter, or the first of the two last chapters, Luke fired a torpedo to block a second torpedo from ship, the evil meditation Sith sphere that is apparently super important, but you and I, of course, have never encountered it before.
No.
And everything went white. And then we did a whole second story with Ben Skywalker and his friend Tahiri Vela, the barefoot Jedi.
Indeed. And you would know that if you were subscribed to patreon.com/systemmastery at the $2 or more level.
That is correct. We did a deep dive on Tahiri Vela, the barefoot Jedi, as one of our bonus content events at the $2 level on our Patreon.
Yes.
Who knows what we'll do this time? Actually, I do, because I've been promising it for two episodes in a row now. So, you know, tune in for that. Come on down to our Patreon and join in. It's a good time.
Indeed. But these two chapters have nothing to do with Ben or Lando or anything that was going on with them.
No, sir.
First, we're going to check in with old Han Solo.
Yeah, Han Solo.
He is Ham Solbo.
What do we used to call him? It was Ham Jello?
Yeah, Ham Jello and Kabanka. All right, Kabanka.
Oh, those were a childhood halcyon day.
When we were in our
late 30s. Well, you were in your mid-30s.
Yeah.
So, Han wakes up and finds that he is playing Sabacc.
And he finds that he is a giant cockroach now.
Yeah, he's Han Samsa. Look, I'm doing it now.
Yeah, you did it.
I remembered the name of the guy. That's from a different bonus content, by the way.
God, you should really be in our bonus contents. We're doing jokes.
We're going to reference it constantly. That's our new method to force you to join it.
Yeah, you're not going to get any of the jokes. They're all behind a paywall now. Every joke is behind the paywall.
Also, our Let's Play of Danganronpa. You can't be sure it's not at the $10 level until you go and check.
Yeah, it might be. Bitch, I might be.
It's not, but it might be.
So Han wakes up strapped to a chair in a reasonable facsimile of a high-end gambling sabacc table establishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, casino establishment. Style Huskow.
Yeah.
Wait, that's a jail. Hang on.
Yeah, hold on.
Back it up. I have added nothing.
Yeah, the whole thing around him is it's basically all of the people that were there before, but they're all cosplaying as being in a casino now. So like Murta Gev is dressed up as the dealer.
Yeah, she's a dealer. They keep using the word tunic in this book. And it feels like it means something different every time they say it.
I think it means what they think it means.
No, I'm pretty sure it does. I mean, it's just a shirt. It's just that in Star Wars, no one can just be wearing a shirt. It always has to be a homespun tunic of rough fabrics.
Ooh. Yeah, except this, because Murta's in a so nice one This is supposed to look like a high-end gambling establishment that they've set up here.
We're in the very fanciest of casinos, your Canto Bite, if you will.
They've got some Mandalorian who's all yoked going around giving drinks, which I just love the idea of some Mandalorian being like, hey, do you need a gin and tonic?
I mean, ultimately, that's got to be the best assignment if you're some Mandalorian gunrunner under Mira Gev's crew and you're like, what do you do? Oh, I kill for a living. I'm the world's greatest fighter pilot. I'm awesome. I'm an awesome Mandalorian with a jetpack and a heavy machine gun. And then he's like, so wait, my assignment for the day is to hand people pink foam with a shrimp sticking out of it? This is going to be fun. I'm into this.
Ah, a break.
Because I don't know about you, but whenever I have a job and one day of the job is go do something insane, I'm always so happy with that.
Because if you have a job doing the same thing over and over and then they're like, hey, we got a weird project for you, you're like, nice.
Yeah, like when I worked at Trader Joe's, we had a huge blackout in San Diego that lasted like 14 hours. And the next day, my job was to stand outside of all the spoiled, rotten food that was sitting in the parking lot and wave off people with a broom handle. I spent 6 hours doing that, and I know that sounds like a horrible monster thing to do, like keeping food out of the mouths of poor people or whatever, but it was rotted food, and we would have gotten sued.
Yes.
And so it was a weird job, though. It was a weird job to go out and stand guard over Food Mountain.
That sounds great.
So to me, this Mandalorian's got the high life. He's just like, oh, fuck yes, I get to wear a dumb little outfit and hand out canapes.
And I don't know why, in my mind, he basically looks like a Chippendale dancer. Like, just sleeveless with the cuffs. I don't know. It just, in my head, that's what I'm picturing.
Yeah, I can see that. Sure. You want to fan cast him real quick?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Jason Manganiello?
Joe Manganiello?
No, Jason Manganiello, his older, sexier brother.
With a different pronounced last name.
Yeah, he's got a little more gristle and a differently pronounced last name.
Good. That's what I like to hear.
But they are brothers.
But they are brothers.
It's very complicated. The family tree of the Manganiellos and the Manganiellos is...
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad we've discovered...
What's his real pronunciation?
Manganiello.
Oh, Manganiello. That just sounds like a tasty, like, British.
It sounds like someone crossbred some citrus fruits, yeah. And you got a Manganiello.
Yeah, it does. But anyway, I'm still casting Joe Manganiello as the dude who has to hand out canapes.
There you go.
Are we good?
That's fine.
Everything fine?
Yeah. Okay. I love it.
Thumbs up. Now, Han is also studded over with electrodes and needles and junk, and he can kind of tell, but he's strapped down, so there's not too much he can do.
Yeah. It's... It's definitely supposed to be a very off-putting, disorienting thing for him, because right now they're not just playing sabacc for money. Oh, no. They're playing for answers.
This is so... The Kreft brothers are getting really starting to drain on me, and I feel like it's pretty much, we're at the same point, the halfway point in the book, where I hate them about as much as I hated Shizor.
I'm... I'm having the exact same thing I did with Shizor, where I just keep loving him more, and they're going to do something that makes me hate them, though.
Yeah, I mean, they're...
Because right now, they have just become, like, Bond villains. Because mm-hmm. instead of going, all right, well, we got this guy, and we want some information out of him, so let's do that.
Let's just torture him. They're like, all right, we're going to dress him up in fancy clothes, stick him up with needles, and put him at a sabacc table. And then when he comes to, they'll be like, ah, the bet is to you, Solo. And he doesn't even look at his cards. He's like, what are we playing? This is the reason I'm not a huge fan of them, because every time we check in with anyone's thoughts on the Kreft brothers, they have to briefly pause to remind us what Kalumi are and do. Every time. So Han's like, there's no point in playing sabacc with Kalumis. They're incredibly good at it, and they'll instantly win because their brains work 1,000 times faster than me, and they super cheat. And I'm like, yeah, dude, but don't you remember 25 years ago when you played with
a Kalumi and you won
a planet? Or did that...
You remember?
I remember because I'm a professional at your life.
Yeah, but there's two of them, and...
There is only one of him.
Well, yeah, because the odds are stacked against him because not only does he have to win in order to get his questions answered,
mm-hmm.
and they win and get their question answered, but... It's basically two versus one. If either of them beats him,
well, that
they
also,
get the answer.
They can also instantly telepathically communicate with silent radio waves.
They can just look at each other and go, I've got a whatever. I've got this. Great. I'll fold.
I mean, there's a whole thing in here because this is going to be yet another chapter displaying how incredibly good at basic card mechanics Han is and also how lucky he is.
Yes.
There's a whole thing in here about how... Marvid is worried that Kratheus must have a better hand than him, and I'm like, what the fuck do you just check with him via your secret radio super communicator? Why are you actually playing the fucking card game?
Also, even if you were like, no, we want to do this straight up, I'd be like, but why would you quit the hand?
Mm-hmm.
It only takes one of you having a better hand, regardless of what either of your hand is. The fact that sabacc is played where the cards can change while you're holding them mm-hmm. means even if your hand is garbage, just stay in the fucking round.
Although I think they're playing a flat variation of sabacc where the cards don't change.
No, they do, because Han specifically is like, oh... He looked at his cards, and now he's worried about them.
Oh,
they must have changed.
Okay, I had a different interpretation of that scene, and I think... Anyway, my interpretation of that part was he had three cards, he got dealt a fourth card, and he was like, oh, shit, because the fourth card did nothing for him and actually made his position more precarious. It's like if you've already got four cards in blackjack, and they add up to, like, 15, and then he was like, 13, he was like, hit me, and he got dealt a two. And he was like, ah, fuck, this isn't helpful, and now I'm significantly closer to busting if I take again.
See, but in the way they describe it, though, is he gets the card, and then Han stalls, essentially, until he looks at his hand and is like, oh, I don't know anymore.
Yeah, so anyway, he does the exact same trick here that he does when playing against Lando, which is, if I know what my cards are, then they'll beat me.
Yeah, so if I know what my cards are, then they can play against that. But if I just lock in my random bullshit, then I'm playing against whatever they think I have.
So the Krefts, first of all, Myrdagev also here, and like we said, the dealer, and she is very grumpy about this whole situation. Because he doesn't start by talking to them. He's like, what's up, Gev? What am I doing here? And she's like, you're playing sabacc solo, you dumbass. Just fucking play. And they're like, here's the deal, says, I think, Kratheus. We're going to play sabacc with you, and we're going to read all of your micro expressions and little chemical things happening in your body and so on. And we're not playing for money, Solo. We're playing for questions.
Where am I? Is that your opening bid? Fuck off.
Don't do that.
You horrible Bond villains.
That's basic conversational shit. What am I, seven? We playing D&D and you're twisting my wish spell?
It's so good. I love it so much because they're just being assholes the whole time.
Yeah. So the way the game's going to work is whoever wins, everyone submits a question to another player over the course of the game.
Raising is refinements or related questions to the first one.
Yeah. And whoever wins the pot doesn't have to answer any questions and instead gets all the questions answered from everyone else who is playing. So basically, it is very two against one. The two of them get to ask Han questions, and all he gets to do is ask one of them questions. And his questions, unfortunately, are pretty basic survival type stuff, because he's like, yeah, sure, I'll play. Where am I?
Yeah.
And they're like, you're at a Sabacc table on our ship. I can give you that for free. And he's like, no, really. I want to know like where I am.
Where in the galaxy am I specifically?
And Kratheus is like, well, I'm not a cheater, Solo. So I will tell you the following. I will not be able to give you coordinates for where you are in the galaxy.
But I can tell you where you are. But not exactly, because one cannot be sure. You're like,
I don't want to play this game if all your answers are going to be this shit. Let's do a control question. What is 2 plus 2? Oh, the answers to that are many and numerous.
Oh, it depends on the type of math you're using.
You know
all right, well.
I'm going to go to the bathroom. His question is, where are we? And the question asked of Kratheus to him is, how did you feel when Chewbacca died?
Which is great, given that we've very recently read the book where Chewbacca died.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Like, for us, it was very, very close to what happened. But for Han, it's been like 15, 20 years.
Yeah. So Marvid is specifically just pissy that Han won't look at his cards. So when he's like, after the Kratheus question comes through, it goes to Marvin, and he's like, you haven't looked at your cards, Solo. And Solo's like, I don't think I violated any rules. Show me where it says I have to.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I fold anyway. I'm fairly certain that Kratheus has a better hand than me.
Which, again, why?
Why?
Even if Kratheus did, you could get another card and have a better hand.
It's not like someone comes in second place in Sabacc.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, oh, but if he beats it, then I also have to answer his question. I felt great when Chewbacca died.
Marvid, who ate the tuna salad that I left in the fridge? I fold.
Fold. Out. But Han Solo is basically taking this opportunity to once again try and drive a wedge between the brothers, as he is only like talking to Kratheus, and anytime Marvid butts in, he's like, yeah, I wasn't talking to you anyway, Kratheus.
Yeah.
And so he's at least still got the presence of mind to fuck with them.
Yeah. Yeah. He's fucking with the other because he's hooked on the brothers.
The brothers.
Yeah, so basically he's still paying a lot of obeisance and respect to Kratheus, but it's all an act designed to piss off Marvid. And for some reason, despite the fact that these Kalumi are always 5 steps ahead of the people who are 12 steps ahead of everyone, it's working really well and really easily.
Yeah, it's just every time they talk about them, like literally every time someone mentions the Kalumi, they're like, well, we can't outthink them. They're always going to be 2 steps ahead. And yet you meet them and they're like, hey, that guy said you're a butt.
He did what? How dare he? Lasers engage. No, you idiot. I didn't say you look like a butt. But you might have. But you didn't tell me that you didn't say I look like a butt. I'm 2 steps ahead, Kratheus.
I love these idiots so much.
But Kratheus, I do look like a butt. How have you not mentioned it before? I sense treachery.
So, the refinement in the game goes on. Like, Han's trying to figure out more about what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Kratheus is just trying to emotionally fuck with Han, because he's like, hey, how come you felt worse when Chewbacca died than Anakin? And he's like, oh, fuck, you're an asshole.
Yeah, no, the second question is, how, you know, it's going to be nice to hear how you felt when Chewbacca died. How is it that you felt less bad about Anakin dying? And Han, in his head, is like, oh, well, I actually have a really good answer for that, so that's not going to be a problem for me.
Because, you know, we weren't in the middle of a war when Chewbacca died. We were just trying to rescue people, but
we were still confused as to what was even going on at the time.
But, you know, Anakin at the time was basically a soldier and died in war. We all knew that could happen.
Yeah, and I was a general and I was also in the war. But what we learned from this is something that we didn't know, that the next couple books in the Yuuzhan Vong crisis after the one that we read, apparently Han just fucks off. And it's just like, I can't deal with anything right now. I'm going to go be a smuggler for a while because of my Chewbacca dying.
Yeah, he just gets real sad. He gets a bad case of the sads about Chewbacca and just is like, all right, well, fuck the fact that our entire galaxy is being invaded. I'm going to go have me time.
I would like it if his thought in his head was, oh, well, shoot, it's because when Chewbacca died, that was R.A. Salvatore writing the book. But then when Anakin died, that was Michael P. Coob McDowell, and he doesn't write me as especially emotional, so... actually, I have no idea what book Anakin died in. I'm just throwing a random Star Wars author at the top of my head. I apologize to Michael P. Coob McDowell.
You should.
Mm-hmm. You should apologize to me, fucking Yavethan crisis. Okay, so yeah, and then the final refinement, which is what was something about Jason Solo. It was like who hurt more between Anakin and Jason Solo dying or something.
Yeah, it's it's something about like, hey, when why did you love Jason less than Anakin?
That's right. Why did you love Jason less than Anakin? I don't know, cuz you went completely bugfuck and turned into a Sith man.
cuz Jason was just a weird little idiot that then went dark side because he was like, this ought to help.
Yeah. He was like, well, the problem with all you damn Jedi is that you're not Sith. I'll solve the problem my way. And then before that, he was always just fighting with his dad about force purity or whatever.
Oh, yeah. He was kind of a weird, like, force Nazi before that.
I was going to say, he was on, like, force front for, like, you know, hanging out in his room on the Falcon, posting to force front for weeks.
Yeah, he's like, well, at least I have force purity. I've got purity of midichlorian.
We can't leave governing up to the Gungan.
It is the Jedi's burden.
Yeah, so that's more or less why. I mean, Jason sucked.
Yeah, but you know, again, it's one of those things where
that's not
you're forcing
you tell a dad.
Han to be like, yeah. Hey, you have to confront the fact that you didn't like one of your kids as much as one of the others.
Hey, my kid didn't like me very much. He killed my sister-in-law.
Ugh.
Like him personally, he did that.
He done did it.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, but ultimately Han is still trying to play Sabacc to the best of his ability. Like we were saying, a thing happens on the first bet round where Kratheus does look at his cards and offers to take a fourth, and upon looking at the fourth, he looks distraught.
Yeah, because he's counting seconds in between whether they accept a raise or not. So
yes.
At first, it takes 6 seconds for the first two bets.
Mm-hmm.
And the third bet, when he decides if he's going to stay in, takes 12 seconds. So he's like, oh, okay, hold on. He's fucked up right now.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as he says, okay, I'll take a fifth, like before he even has a chance to look at what the fifth card is, Han's just like, call, we're done.
Yeah. Yeah, the card hits the table and Han's like, call. And he's like, call, because he's fairly certain that Kratheus has busted. And it doesn't matter what trash hand Han has, you can't bust in Sabacc on three cards.
Yeah, so and indeed, the cards go red, which is...
locked.
That's the, hey, you busted.
Oh,
the
right.
Back of Kratheus's cards.
That's right, yes. His turn green and Kratheus's turn red, the sign that he is busted.
And Han doesn't even look at his cards, just... shoves him back over there. Doesn't need to know what he had.
Nope. You probably had some trash. You probably had like an 11.
Yeah, but it's better if he doesn't know because then he can't convey anything to them either.
Yes. Now, this is just starting to really... between this and the constant...
I have the best hands ever.
Yeah. Not just him constantly winning, but also him being nice to Kratheus and mean to Marvid. Marvid is just losing his shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, Marvid... we know is sort of a tantrum baby.
Yes.
And the fact that he's like, oh, I would leave you one without
I'm pretty sure Kratheus would be a tantrum baby, too, if the role had been reversed. These guys just kind of both suck.
I mean, yes, but even from the very first that we saw them.
Now, Kratheus, when we first met them, Kratheus was the one who was grumpier about business. He was the one who was like, fuck it, we'll just buy you out. What do we give a shit?
And Marvid was the one who was like, we should just murder everyone. I think murder is a good thing. And you're like, dude, aren't you supposed to be like a smart schemer?
Yeah, it turns out murder is a very smart scheme.
I've got this delicate scheme. I call it murder.
It works 100% of the time.
60% of the time.
So he gets the answer to his question, does Han, because he wins the hand. The answer is that they are at their home base, which is a bubble... outside of space-time.
Yeah, they are at...
the core of the rift, they call
it. Yeah, they're like, oh, you have to go to the middle of the rift to get there, but where we are isn't exactly certain because the space-time presses outward from where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And...
which is the opposite of a black hole, apparently. They're
because black hole sucks in everything, and this is, I guess, expanding it out. So it's like the ass of a black hole.
Well, I mean, there is astronomic theory that there should be white holes to counterbalance black holes in the universe.
Yeah,
that just sit there farting out like
stuff.
Huge graphitic pressure outward, and and incredible amounts of energy should be coming out of them too.
So I guess that
probably, although, you know, not to the level. If one of those actually existed, it'd be constantly spewing out huge amounts of radiation and radio waves and light and shit.
Indeed.
And it would just melt them wherever they happen to be. So it's probably not one of those.
It's probably some dumb Star Wars thing.
Yep. It's some dumb Star Wars thing.
Maybe it's crystals. It's been crystals at least two times.
Might be crystals. Could be Jedis.
Could be Jedi crystals.
I mean, there have been Jedi crystals and crystal Jedis.
Indeed.
So.
You never know with Star Wars.
I wonder if anyone has, any of the books mentioned someone taking one of those intelligent Sil crystals out of the planet from Planet of Twilight and running a lightsaber current through it to see what kind of cool lightsaber you get.
Oh, you get a screaming one.
Just a I mean, that is the coolest Sith lightsaber you could possibly build. Oh, yeah, my crystal's alive and it hates this.
Except it doesn't actually work like a kyber crystal in that it gives me a lightsaber. It just tortures the guy in the crystal.
Oh, yeah, this isn't a lightsaber. It's just a taser.
I hit a button and it makes a thing scream.
There's a lightsaber on the other side.
I hit a button and it makes that scream from the beginning of Mr. Wendell.
I mean, I like it if it works as a lightsaber, but it's like a crappy one. Like, oh, no, it sucks. I mean, it's just for show.
It's more of a flashlight than anything at this point.
I just do it because I like the screaming.
I got a big screamy flashlight. And that's me, Darth Dickwad.
I'm sorry, you mean Darth Dickwad?
Darth Ickwad?
Darth Ickwad. It's me, Darth Ickwad Crane. I was defeated by the Headless Jedi. He did have shoes, though.
Yes. Not barefoot.
There can only be one barefoot Jedi.
Ah, yes, the Contessa.
Okay, so, I mean, is there more that we have to do in this chapter?
No. I mean, this one was pretty short, self-contained little story.
Yeah, it was a little tiny story. Han does learn about three quarters of the way through the chapter that the needles that are in him are really, really, really in him.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
Like, oh yeah, they're going all the way into the middle of your brain, sir.
They're like, don't try and pull that shit out. You'll probably kill yourself.
You'll definitely leak brain fluid everywhere.
But they're there to make sure that when you do answer our questions, you're being honest. Which again, they keep threatening, like, oh, if you don't want to play Sabacc, we'll just do normal means. And I'm like, why don't you do that? You hate him already.
Yeah, what is this shit?
All you're doing is offering up information to him for nothing.
Well, I assume that they're both so arrogant, they're like, that their whole thing was like, we'll beat him at what he's best at. That'll show him.
Oh wait, we're terrible at this.
Well, Han, we're playing a game where all three of us fly Millennium Falcons through an asteroid field. And then after that, we're going to play a different game where we all mourn Chewbacca's.
Good.
Whoever mourns Chewbacca's the hardest is the strongest among us. We're two steps ahead.
My mourning is too strong for you, Traveler.
I'm already moved to anger.
I'm going into battle, and I need your strongest mourning.
My strongest mournings will kill you.
Kill a Wookiee, let alone a man.
Why do you make them, then?
Come on. What is the point of you?
Potion seller, you kind of suck as a potion seller. Oh, yes, I would really prefer it if you called me potion crafter. They're not for sale.
They're just artisanal.
I'm just trying to win a county fair blue ribbon.
You shouldn't eat this, chili. It's too hot for you, Traveler.
It's made with ghost peppers. Those are hot right now. And in general.
They're so eaten. This chili.
What are we doing?
I don't know. I was just reminded the other day that we used to do, well, I used to do a shitload of references to Potion Cellar, and I wanted to do more because I love it. I haven't stopped loving Potion Cellar, even though I did stop making references to it.
Okay, well, I'm sure you just needed to get that word out there.
I did. I needed to let people know.
Well, good thing we have a platform. Okay, so yeah, that's pretty much what's going on with Han. Meanwhile, Luke has woken up, and he is inside the Omni.
Yes. R2-D2 is zapping him with a little electronic prod, because him and Leia both went into a healing Jedi trance.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, because they hit themselves with a torpedo, and they are both mega fucked up.
Yeah, they slammed into the Omni, and then also had to detonate their core.
Mm-hmm.
So they got burns all over, like gashes. They got broken bones. They were just ultra fucked.
Yeah. Now Luke's not looking great exactly. He just gave himself 5 hours to go into his healing trance and then had R2 wake him up. But when he looks over at Leia, she is just fucked.
Yeah, like she still has a bunch of gashes on her face. She's got.
I mean, she was even still wounded from the last time she got blowed up in this book.
Oh, yeah. Like she's got horrible, like, burn boils all over her.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a good time.
She's like half melted and has no hair left.
Yeah. Her eyebrows and eyelashes and a lot of the like right side of her hair are gone.
Yeah, but at least that gives her a really sweet looking undercut.
Yeah.
Why, she's 67-year-old punk Leia now.
Hell yeah.
Fuck yes. That sounds rad as hell. But eventually he looks over and he's like, I wish I could let her stay in her dumb healing trance so she could get better. But we are hiding in a locker room on the blowed up part of the Omni, and they're going to come looking for us eventually.
Well, he was like, okay, R2, wake me up if something happens.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, something has.
Yes. Yeah. When he's directed to what's happened, he peers over a bulkhead and through a window, and there down below is a young woman who is dressing down a Duro guy in worker overalls.
Yeah. And it is indeed our barely legal teen Sith.
Mm-hmm. Savara Rain, as we have come to know her. But apparently the Duro guy isn't calling her that. He is calling her that. Luke doesn't recognize her as that.
Yes. He knows her as Vistara, the Sith that turned against him when they were both trying to defeat the Yuuzhan Vong or something.
I think Vistara Kai dated Ben Skywalker for a little while too. But yeah, he's like, that's Vistara Kai. And I'm like, okay, Vistara Kai and Savara Rain. How many different like candle fragrances does this lady need for herself?
I'm going to be so many different throw pillows.
Well, my real name is Vistara Kai, but for the Midwest beauty pageant circuit, I'm going by Savara Rain. Either way, I'm very unpleasant at Disneyland.
So unpleasant. So yeah, he's mostly just like, all right, what the fuck is going on? As much as my initial reaction is, oh, I hate her like a whole lot and would love to kill her. He's like, well, you know, I'm all fucked up.
And plus, that's the dark side.
And, you know, maybe let's not just immediately do revenge.
Yeah, now she's down there yelling at this Duro guy, and her basic whole thing is, obviously, they didn't die. They're super great Jedis, and they are. This was definitely a trick.
You didn't find any body parts. And he's like, yeah, their core exploded. That probably would have vaporized them. She's like,
definitely didn't. And then she walks over to like a chunk of wreckage, and she's like, well, show me what you see here. And he's like, well, that's a hatch. That's a hatch on the side of their dumb spaceship where they were definitely, you know, cooked alive. And she's like, this hatch is open. And he's like, oh, God, how did I not notice that? And I'm also wondering this question because apparently it's the size of a garage door.
And also, who gives a shit? If a thing crashed into the side of the ship,
no,
maybe the hatch opened.
No, it's cool. They jumped. They opened up the hatch right before it crashed, and they jumped.
Yeah, well, it's like when a elevator is crashing down. If you jump right before it hits, you're going to be fine.
You're going to be perfectly fine, as proven by Wile E. Coyote on a number of occasions.
No, the fact that she just looks at an open hatch and is like, that means they're alive. Not that a hatch came loose after it exploded, but definitely they're alive.
Well, she's just very genre savvy. She's like, look, Leia can fly in space. It's a well-documented filmed fact.
Look, I used to work with Luke Skywalker. He has bullshit made-up power, okay?
Yeah. No, they are definitely alive, and they're on this ship somewhere, and they are going to fuck up everything if we don't find them while they're still super fucked up, because they definitely are.
Yeah. Look, they had to crash into here at ridiculous speed.
Yeah. Now, Leia, or luckily, apparently, force healing trances also completely hide your force signature.
Yes, because you draw the force inward to heal, so you're not projecting outward.
I guess that's fair. I feel like it would create a big, you know, a very specific spot of potent force for sensing. I mean, it wouldn't be very big. It'd be like roughly Princess Leia sized. but you'd be like, oh, well, there's a lot of force energy kind of concentrating over there.
And
but then again, that's fine-tuned force sensing, which isn't what Sith are supposed to be good at.
No, but like Luke is saying, okay, I've drawn my force aura like super close into myself,
mm-hmm.
and the healing trance makes your force like concentrated within you instead of being an outside aura. But even then, if you were a Sith, you'd be like, okay, cool, I'm just gonna see, let me try and sense if anybody is alive around here. I'll reach out with the force and
mm-hmm.
oh, it looks like there are two living people. I don't know that those are Jedi, but there are two alive people right near this crash site.
Honestly, I'm very impressed at her restraint. If I were her in this situation, if I was a 20-year-old mass-murdering Sith witch anyway, I'd be like, all right, great. Let's isolate the half of the ship that I'm not on and flood its atmosphere.
Yeah.
Just dump it to space. There we go. That'll kill 50% of that kills 50% of Luke and Leia. Like, speaking statistically, they're 50% dead now. Plus, I did concentrate the flooding to the part of the ship that they landed on, so I'm going to bump that up a couple of points. You killed thousands of people.
Sith.
I mean,
they never should have put me in charge of anything.
I'm going to kill you for mentioning it. I mean, what is that, pirate?
But Luke then goes back and he's like, well, shit, I got to wake up Leia and be like, hey, Leia, we got a situation. We got to get the fuck out.
Yeah. So he's like, hey, look, okay, first of all, draw your force energy in. Okay, good. Now you got that. You got that taken care of. Great. All right. Vistara Kai is here. And
oh,
Leia's like,
fuck.
Oh, I'm going to kill her.
Ooh, you know what I want to do? I want to stab her.
I want to kill her real good.
He's like, yeah, even if we were in a position to do that, please don't.
Yeah, that's dark side stuff, Leia. Please don't dark side stuff. And she's
please stop trying to dark side this entire novel.
And she's like, hey, haven't you read The Crystal Star? I'm really good at dark side stuff.
And it doesn't corrupt me at all.
Not in a little bit, because I'm doing it for my kids or whatever.
I got a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, fuck her, am I right?
Yeah, so their new plan is to keep moving so that Vistara Kai, or as everyone on the ship is calling her, Savara Rain, can't find them.
Yeah, so first order of business is to get out of their melty, fucked up jumpsuits.
And put on workers' coveralls.
Yeah, and ooh, it's a bad time for them because they're like, well, I'm covered in horrible burns and like my entire body hurts, so let me just peel one thing of stuck-to-me clothes off, and then put some rough clothes over that.
Ah, this is feeling great on my sunburns and actual burns.
Ah, like sandpaper all over me. Fabulous.
Ooh, the best part is when it sticks a little bit, and it feels like my skin is Velcro. I hate this.
And then, you know, they get a hat and a gas mask, and they're like, it's unfortunate that we can't just put the mask on because no worker would have this uncomfortable piece of shit on unless they were specifically in an area they needed it.
Right. So then they start making their way through the ship. And as they do, you can hear Rain in the bottom being like, okay, they're not only they're definitely alive, but they're going to start moving through the ship now. And I'm going to be willing to bet they're wounded. So let's go ahead and I'm going to go check, like, say, for example, the locker room surrounding the hole where the ship came in.
Oh, yeah. She's like, hey, Neuros guy, Does this place have an area where people would go in an emergency if there was a crash? He's like, oh, yeah, there's plenty around here. It's over there. Okay, well, why haven't you looked in there? Jesus fucking Christ, what is wrong with you?
They definitely died.
I don't need to look in any place. Mm-hmm. They're dead.
No, they are. I mean, It's weird how hard it is for people to impress on other folks in the Star Wars universe that Luke Skywalker cannot be killed.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it feels like she could just be like, look, this dude's, like, in charge of all the Jedi. You've heard of the Jedi, right? Like, the Jedi, you know, the, you know, fancy hokey force religion, but then was proven to be real, like, 35 years ago. And ever since then, they've been a real pain in the ass for everyone. Yeah, they're here. And this one in particular is the best one.
Yeah. I need you to understand, when I tell you that this dude does not play fair.
Yeah. This dude one time got real mad, grabbed a Star Destroyer with his mind, and hit another Star Destroyer with it.
So
that happened once.
You know, it's possible he may have not died in a simple crash.
In fact, it's highly unlikely. In fact, having done a lot of homework about Luke Skywalker, there is a famous time where he faked a crash to get onto a planet to fool a whole Star Destroyer full of Empire people.
It did not work.
It didn't work, but he's still alive.
Just so you know, you're an idiot.
So,
but yes, he has R2 be like, hey, R2, go fucking seal the door super shut so that it takes them a minute to get through, because we got to limp our ragged, broken bodies across this catwalk.
Yeah. Now, even as they're making their way across the catwalk, they start seeing the heat go through the door as Savara starts cutting through, because she's like, I'm not going to wait for this bullshit broken door. Fuck this. I'm a Sith.
I've got a lightsaber. Mm-hmm. Meh.
It screams. Turn me off. Man, that's a horrible thing to have thought of to do. So they make their way to an area where a lot of evacuating workers are making their way out of the impacted crash site part of the Omni.
Mm-hmm.
And they line up, and they're immediately spotted by the Mando, because they're, again, very, very wounded.
Yeah.
And the Mando guard, because there's a Mando guard and there's two Nargons. Remember Nargons? We haven't talked about that.
Remember
in a while.
Nargons?
They were so hot in 1988. So the Mando and the two Nargons see them as they're coming up, and the Mando's like, what the fuck happened to you two? And they're like, oh, we were in the blast zone.
Yeah, we managed to hide out, but we were caught in there.
Sat too close to Shamu. Do not do it.
Man. Splash zone. Am I right? Can I go?
Yeah.
I got to go to the infirmary real quick.
Yeah, and he's like, well, I need to see your identification. And Luke straight up just does the old, no, you don't.
No, I'm good.
You do not need to see
I left it back there. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, you left your information back there. It's fine. You should go to the infirmary. Because, you know, Mando. Now, Nargons, on the other hand, are like, what the fuck are you doing?
I don't have enough brain for you to force fuck with.
Yeah.
Let me see your ID. And the Mando just kind of goes, nah, it's fine. They can go.
No, let them go through, you big dumb lizard robot who could easily tear me in half.
And they're, I guess, bred to take instructions, because they do for now.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, fine.
Well, apparently they're bred to take instructions and then kill you about a minute later.
Yeah. Because every time we've seen them, they're like, ah, yes, we will be subservient. Wait a minute. No.
Fuck you. I'm going to tear you in half. So Luke and Leia make their way towards the elevator that's going to take them to the infirmary. But they aren't going to the infirmary, because that would just get them caught. Their plan is to go up to the executive boardrooms and go to the good infirmary.
Yeah. Well, they also need to go up there, because that's the only place where they're probably going to find information on where the Krefs took Han.
Yeah.
Because right now, they have no idea where they went off to.
Yeah. Now, Luke does mention that now that Vestara Kai is pursuing them, it might be in their best interest to just steal a ship and take off and go after the Orel moon. But they're not going to do that yet.
No, because, again, they have no idea, and just farting around the rift isn't exactly going to do anything.
I think the weirdest thing to me was the part where he was like, well, we should steal a ship, but he doesn't say ship. He says some made-up slang for Star Wars ship I hadn't heard before. He was like, we should steal a Bessie.
Which I assume
cowboying everything.
Well, I assume that's just the name of one of the fucking tugboat things that exist around here.
Actually, now that I think about it, if it is Bessie, if I was right with that term, that's just Bezalisk, isn't it?
I don't know. Or Bezalik.
Bezalik, the Mando's fighter ships.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does actually add up. Never mind. I apologize, Troy Denning.
I am so sorry.
I apologize to Troy Denning. I would also like to apologize to Michael P. Coob McDowell. Kevin J. Anderson, continue to fuck yourself.
I know you have been, but please continue.
Never stop. Never stopping. That's just a huge slam on Kevin J. Anderson out of nowhere. Okay, so But they're going to head up to the boardroom. But as they press the elevator lights to go up to the boardroom, some Nargons come up behind them.
Like, hey, you can't use that.
Anybody who works here would know they're not allowed to go to the executive boardroom. Roll a bluff check.
Show me your ID. They're like, we told you we don't have it. Then we will murder you. Okay, but I've got other identification. I got, I don't know, credit chips or something.
I've got other identification. I wrote my name on my underwear.
Here you go.
I have a utility bill. Here, look at my most recent utility bill. And here's my my diner's
pay stubs.
I got pay stubs. I got a Diner's Club card. What do you need? Look, here's a library membership. This is all just stalling.
Luke and Leia are just hoping they get close enough so that when they bring the lightsabers out, they can just murder them immediately.
And it almost works, but not quite. They get the lightsabers out, they murder the Nargons, but Nargons are hard to kill, so they get a couple more gashes into Luke and Leia.
Yeah. Luke gets slammed across the side, mm-hmm. so his ribs are all fucked up, and Leia gets just like clawed across her back.
Yeah, they're very, I mean, everyone in this book is taking a lot of hit points worth of damage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is just like, it says in the book that they are leaking blood. Like, if they stand still for a minute, there is a puddle beneath them.
Yeah, this is a fucked up situation. They are not doing great. So now at this point, they're still heading up to the executive area, but they're going specifically to the executive infirmary. Hopefully, they think, the infirmary is going to be like most Starship infirmaries, staffed with droids.
Yeah. And, you know, even if it wasn't, they could just be like, well, we'll, I don't know, slap you around a little and then take some back to Sav or whatever.
I mean, they could just be like, force control. You have to follow your Hippocratic Oath or whatever.
Do no harm.
And they'd be like, wait a minute, Hippocrates is an Earth thing.
Yes, but Hippocrates was also an ancient Jedi consular, so...
He had to go to hell once. That's the that's the force dimension where Sith go.
Anyway, that's us.
Don't worry about it. All words are the same word. There's ducks on Naboo. All right, carry on.
There we go. they get out, and when they get out the elevator, they are greeted by a couple of Mandos.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's the executive area. They've got some security there.
Yeah, and we run into, I think it's a brother and sister pair of Mandos.
Yep.
Their names are like Jarl and Devis or something like that.
It's a brother-sister that's like Jorm and Gino.
Yeah, there you go. It's Jackie and Jorm Jomp.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. That's it. You got it.
And they just immediately pull guns on the two of them so that there's not really a fight here. They pull guns on the two, or lightsabers or whatever it is, on Jimbo and Kearney, and they're like, you two, you're gonna, you know, get up against the wall and shut up and hold still.
Yeah.
And this goes on for a while with the two. It's a whole standoff thing, but ultimately the Mandos do know when they're more or less beaten, so they just kind of go up against the wall, and they're like, look, the moment we get out of this, we're gonna kill you. I'm just gonna let you know.
You're asking us to take off our armor, and you're gonna take it, and the Beskar armor for a Mando is... like a thing for us, so... Mm.
Well, because that happens eventually. At first, they're like, we're gonna march the two of you into the infirmary, and then we'll figure it out from there. And at this point, they're like, yeah, we're still going to kill you, or someone else on the ship is.
You're leaking blood. A Nargon's going to come up here, sniff you out, and destroy you.
Yeah, yeah. And they're like, yeah, we'll figure that out when we get to it. But they take them into the infirmary, and Leia's plan is basically to use a hypodermic full of anesthetic to shoot these two unconscious.
Yeah.
Then strip them of their armor and so that they can't come after them right away and dump them. And that's when the girl of the brother-sister group is like, hey, don't make us take off our armor. That's like a whole religious thing.
That's a fucked up thing to do to us specifically.
That's a religious thing. And she's like, yeah, it's super convenient that your religion is involved. It's like, don't disarm us and take our weapons and stuff.
It's fucked up if you try and make us not be able to kill you.
Yeah. I'm like, you know what? I respect all religions and cultures, but since your entire religious structure is basically tactics, eat a dick. Sorry. According to my religion, I have to be allowed to stand behind you, and I get to have this knife.
They do some intimidation tactics things with them as well, because they're like, oh, you know, we're going to have to put you over here. And they're like, yes, but someone will be on their way shortly. They're like, oh, did you contact someone? Yes. No, you didn't.
No, you're lying.
And the great part is they don't know their names yet. And like Luke just leans in and goes, "No, you didn't, Joram." And he's like, "Ah, fuck, Jedi's, god damn it.
Oh, the natural enemy of the Mando." Well, I thought your natural enemy was like monkey people. Yeah, shut up. No.
Don't worry about that.
Be cool, man. Be cool.
How dare you?
Joram and something else. What was the other one?
Jahan.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like J-H-A-N, I think.
Oh, so Jean.
Jean.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. So Joram and Jean, and they get, you know, knocked unconscious and stuffed in a closet. And at this point, there's a droid in here that's like, "Hey, I don't think I can allow you to stuff Mandos in my closets.
I need you to give me your ID. You'd better have that ready." And Leia just fucking shoots the thing in the head. Like, I don't got time for this bullshit.
I love the description, though. She's just like, "Yeah, why don't you go over there real quick?" And it's like, "All right, I don't see any reason why I shouldn't." And she shoots it in the back of the head, which doesn't kill it. It just removes its motivator circuits. So it just keeps going forward until it bonks into a wall and falls over.
Bump.
like a Roomba. And she's like, "Well, that takes care of that stupid idiot problem." And all the while, she's like plugging drugs into herself and covering herself with bandages and so on. Luke goes off to find medical equipment, and when he comes back, Leia has made a horrifying discovery. Or not actually a useful discovery.
Horrifyingly useful discovery.
Spookily scarifying.
It's magically delicious.
She's found Dina Yuss. Or Yuss.
Yes.
Yuss. Dina Yuss, pale, injured, lying in a hospital bed.
Yeah. And, you know, for us, we know it's probably because she's been
deprived of
whatever the fucking Ketracel White.
Yeah, her enzymes. Her weird clear enzymes.
So she is just on the table looking real fucked up and is like, hey, I'll help you find out where Han is. Because, fuck these guys, am I right?
Yeah. She's like, "Hey, you got to help me up out of this bed, and we got to hurry, because our chance to rescue Han is slipping away.
Just like me.
Just slip sliding. By the way, have you guys seen any clear serums?
You guys got any, like, thick water?"
What you got? Any thick water, you know, that stuff they give you at a hospital if you're at a risk of aspirating?
Yeah.
I'm looking for some of that thick water.
I need that thick water. Maybe mix it up. Give me some thick coffee.
Give me two C's, please.
Thick calf, if you would.
The other day I was on the Wikipedia reading about pureed foods and thickened foods in hospitals.
Oh, yeah.
Both of which sound just awful.
Oh, they're the worst.
But I think the favorite thing about the pureed foods was the food scoops used to serve pureed foods that are in the shape of the thing you have pureed.
Well, yeah, because you can either just get like an ice cream scoop plop of food.
Yeah, hamburger. Yeah.
Or they'll be like, "All right, we pureed like some meat and we crafted the puree to look like a little steak."
Yeah.
So you know at least that's what you're getting into.
Yeah.
We took some corn, pureed it, and then we put it in a little thing that makes it look like corn.
Now, have you ever been in the hospital long enough to have to go on to any kind of hospital diet?
Oh, no. I did work in a hospital for a little while, I've seen the food made.
I did not know that.
Yes.
I thought I knew all your old shitty jobs.
Nope. Yeah, there was a time working in the hospital, and of course, like, I saw all the thick water and everything, and I'm like, ugh.
Now, I am an often hospitalized man.
Yes.
And I have had to eat some weird, dumb diets. When I went in for an overdose of Excedrin migraine that caused my stomach to turn itself inside out, which I don't remember if we were on the podcast yet when that, I think we were.
No. No,
podcast hadn't started for that one.
No. We were not recording when you began to shit your intestines.
Yes, when I got the butt disease and nearly pooped myself to death. And it was a horrifying experience, but the doctors were just like, "Yeah, don't take Excedrin migraine ever again, and you won't be back here for this."
Yeah,
so,
for this.
Kind of a weird event. But they put me on a clear diet, which is just like, okay, your food is these two different broths, and then this dessert broth, and then a Jell-O that's no flavor, and then some water, and here's a little packet of salt. And I was like, "Oh, dude, just kill me. Just
can't you just hook the IV up to me and give me my nutrition that way?"
Yeah. And then for the same one, they made me drink that stuff that shows up under an X-ray.
Oh, yeah.
That big, thick gallon of chalk water.
Yeah, where you're like, hey, here's like a fucking jug of nasty. Why don't you drink this down and we'll see what your insides look like.
I think my favorite thing is when they bring that to you and give it to you, they also bring you a cup of ice.
This ought to help.
This is better cold. And I'm like, no, I don't. I'm just gonna.
You're wrong. It's not better ever.
So I'm an old-handed, disgusting hospital food.
Cold goop.
So when you say thick water, I'm just like, oh, no. I've managed to stay away from the thick water, and I want to keep it that way.
Yeah, I have never had to imbibe thick water, but having poured thick water, I was like, ooh, I'm sorry whoever gets this.
Mm-hmm. Last time I was in the hospital, that one was for the podcast.
Yeah.
I was on the heart danger diet, so it was completely salt-free. And so my nurses immediately noticed I wasn't eating anything. They're like, what's wrong? And I was like, it all tastes like rubber. I hate it. And so they were like, oh, this happens to a lot of people who are being pulled off salt. Here's 15 Jell-Os.
Here's all the Jell-O.
Because if there's the only thing you can eat is salt-free, then you're just going to immediately gravitate towards candy. And here's a lot of it. So there you go. There's some hospital food stories that I only told because we were a little short on time. So does anything else happen? They find Dina Use. That's pretty much the end of
it. Yeah, I mean, that's the end. So
I mean, the big thing we get from this chapter is the intrigue of what the hell is going on with Vistara / Savara.
Yes.
Do we think she changed names, or is there something sinister afoot?
No, I'm sure she just used a different name, because everything we've seen from her, she is terrified of Luke Skywalker.
That is true. She is absolutely 100% afraid of Luke Skywalker.
So I assume she was like, I'm just going to change my name, what people say my name is. So even if a whisper of who I am gets out, it at least isn't the one that he wants to murder.
Yeah, and when he's talking to Joram and Jean, Luke's like, oh, and also we're trying to track down the Sith lady on this ship, Savara Rain. And Joram just goes, oh, they're talking about Miss or Lady Kai. Or no, sorry, back, reverse all that.
Yes.
Yeah, we're looking for Vistara, and they're like, he means Lady Rain. So I assume Luke has to get with the program on that one eventually. I'm still not sure there's not something doubly sinister afoot, though. What if there's something sinister in feet? You don't think so?
I don't think so.
I think so. This book is still kind of lacking a MacGuffin element to it. It's still just
Are
sort of-
you sure? That it's lacking a MacGuffin element.
Well, okay, sure, ship showed up at one point, but I'm still kind of waiting for... Almost every Star Wars novel is someone invented an extra secret piece of technology or a double secret new kind of extra force secret Sith trick. Every one of them has always got to be... It's never just like, and then the Empire shows up and they have Empire stuff, and then the Rebels show up and they have Rebel stuff and they kiss. That never happens. It's always like, I invented a double secret black hole eliminations laser.
Well, I mean, I think the MacGuffin in this is, what are the Krefs actually after, is essentially what it is.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. Well, we'll find out when we find out. In the meantime, folks, something else we could find out is weird articles from Wikipedia.
That's right. We can...
I got there.
We can go ahead and guide you, our special flock, our little lambs, toward patreon.com/systemmastery, where we have curated the very finest of Wikipedia articles for you to consume as we vomit them into your mouths like baby birds.
I mean, I'm honestly more comfortable with vomiting things into our listeners than anything we do being described as curation.
Hey, man, we're curating.
I mean, I guess.
We're not doing that.
We're curating in the same way that like a magpie stealing shit from our yard is curating. Sure. But people keep sending us shit, so yeah, I guess we're curating shit.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, to do that, you go to patreon.com/systemmastery and support us at the what level, John?
Dose, $2.
The two of dollars. What a great deal that is, because it unlocks like 4 to 6 episodes of bonus content every month at the $2 level.
Yeah, it's a real good deal.
Yeah, you should stop by and do it. It's good entertainment. If you're stuck sitting at your office and they won't let you watch YouTube videos, but they will let you have headphones, that's where we come in.
Yeah, we get to sneak in right at the just barely acceptable level.
We'll entertain you all quiet-like.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't tell your boss nothing. It's just you and us.
Don't let anyone else in on this. This is you and me now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to just you.
Yeah.
We're having a special moment.
You goof.
Somebody put semen in our tailpipes.
Jesus Christ, your Jim Cummings is chilling. That's a compliment. All right. So once again,
because I am terrified of Jim Cummings.
Oh, no, Jim Cummings. He'll voice Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, bother.
Okay. So patreon.com/systemmastery for the bonus content. Find us our regular stuff at systemmasterypodcast.com or on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. We're always System Master, wherever you happen to look. This month and this month alone, we're still shilling for our friend's Kickstarter project, which will launch in just a day or two. I think it'll actually come out pretty much the day this episode goes live. That's Descent into Midnight. It's a really cool PBTA-inspired undersea game of collaboration and magic.
Magic collaboration.
And magic collaboration, and coming super fast. Don't play Descent into Midnight if you have a jealous girlfriend.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bit we used before.
And we're going to stick to it now. It's going to be a whole month of that bit.
That's it. That's mm-hmm. the whole thing.
Doctors hate it when you play Descent into Midnight.
One weird trick. Oceanographers hate it.
All right. So support our friend's thing, because we're going to. And then otherwise, thank you so much for listening. I'm Benny Lansley's Bogiano.
And I love winning at Sabacc all the time.
Who doesn't? We'll be right back.